The darkest places, I think we find the biggest things there, yeah. But we're very afraid to go in there. In the darkest places, there is the biggest secrets of our goodness. I think that way deeply, very deeply.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Kalish, for making time. I really appreciate this.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
I'm happy to be here.
Okay, no easy questions here. Let's start with something difficult. So you once said this to me, and it was extremely impactful. You said that a child will only feel as loved as the least favored child in a family. I'm curious if you still stand by that and what you meant by that.
Wow. It's always hard to have friends yet who remember things you say for a long time. You have to not only like think now, you have to like back up what you once said. But I do stand by that. It's something that I've noticed. There's a lot of discussion in any family who has a kid struggling. Is he's hurting the rest of the family, she's hurting the rest of the family. And there are a lot of questions like how to deal with that child. I think there's a deep message to children when they know in a school this is true, in a family it's true, that when I misbehave, you're out. So all of a sudden, the behaviors, there's a certain pressure. I better not cross a line. Now, we might like that as parents, as schools, because then our kids won't cross a line. But am I truly loved, irrelevant to the nachas, to the good feelings I bring to my parents? I think people are sophisticated, and the sense, if I would cross that line, I'm written off. I think there's a big message of, you're my child. The friendship is not negotiable. I think there's a big message that we can give to all our kids when we love each one, and there's not, like, if you cross that line, that behavior, now you're, no, you're my son, you're my child.
So you believe in unconditional love?
Oh, I do. Yes.
Seems impractical to take the most extreme example is like a guy like Hitler, you know, his father should have loved him, assuming that that's, you know, that's.
Wow. Well, we're getting right at the start. I like that.
It's an absurd caricature of evil that is useful, and it's in my own DNA. And so I think it's helpful to talk about because whenever you center conversations around that kind of thing, you're not tiptoeing and you're perpetuating conversation around it.
Right. No, I like honesty and I like giving such an extreme example. So, do you really mean it? Like that's what I really hear in such words to bring up like an extreme case. People ask that all the time, like, but let's say your kid does this. Like, where's the line? That's the question always whenever you speak about unconditional love, but where's the line? And unconditional means unconditional. Reb Moshe Cordova, who wrote the Tomir Dvorah, says that Hashem loves Rishon. It's a very confusing topic. It's a very and a philosophical question. I think there's a certain point, he's my child, I love him. You talk about where the line, you talk about how can I impact, what do I do that the child's misbehaving. But the fact that he's my son and a father loves his child is just the truth. It's not dependent on behavior. He's my son. I love him. If you say I'm in pain that he's struggling, I'm worried about how he's doing, I'm worried is he being himself, those are real concerns. And those are questions. How do I get him to be him or her to be her? Could I help her find herself or him find himself? The fact that's my child, the parent loves. Unconditional love is not something I'll give, like, okay, let me practice. Unconditional love we have. As parents, the question with our kid is not like, give him this, give her that. It's tap in, that's my child. We could all get to that place. The biggest parent who's disappointed in their kid, who's frustrated, is out of touch with self. Because there's a place that they feel, that's my child. So I'm not talking about give on the big, it's not a shita. It's not like my opinion is unconditional. No, I think every parent in the world has unconditional love. I think when we're truest to ourselves, we tap into unconditional love. So it's not a shita. It's not like.
But all this sounds very flowery. Like, not saying it's not true, but I need a practical roadmap. you say tap into yourself. That's why I stopped you there. That's a very arresting thing to say, but I'm not sure what it means.
I want to explain it because I think it's the core of the matter. It's something we've had many discussions for years, and we haven't spoken recently. And my kids and the guys in yeshiva have changed my life. I used to speak to, but I didn't understand it to its depth. And I assume in 10 years I'll look to now and maybe have deeper understanding. I want to say that I'm a parent. I have a son who's sitting here. I don't hold to give him like, hey, I should practice this type. I love him no matter what he does. It's just true. It's not now. But if I have places when we're frustrated from our kid. See, you're not in touch with your love. You don't lose the love. You're angry. You're mad. He hurt you. He defied you. He embarrassed you. I say at all times, be in touch. Look at him. Your own frustration and hurt, you have to learn how to deal with that, what to do with that. Always be aware and be tapped into the love. He's my child. That's a fact. It's just the truth. So when we spoke years with unconditional love, I was trying to do a certain behavior. That's how I saw it. I've discovered as I've gotten older, and I'm happy like we're sitting down, this time in cameras, we've spoken many conversations without cameras. I'm happy, Yitzi, we're re-talking because it's not something, it sounds flowery. I don't blame anybody. I say, oh, come on. I'm talking about practically that you and I have a soul and a child. Hashem put things there to your children. You have a massive love and an unconditional love you have. The toughest father, the father who's frustrated, angry, mad, annoyed. I'm not telling him you should love unconditionally. I'm telling you do love unconditionally. Get in touch with yourself. Be a father. Get in touch with fatherhood.
Once they're in touch with that, and it goes both ways. Something from one of the WhatsApp shiurim, randomly I played one and I got to my AirPods and there was a snippet that's just like tattooed in my brain from in your iconic raspy voice of love. I remember it so vividly. You said, "Be a good son." Like this, like it felt like cinematic. And okay, so how does a son be a good son or a father be a good father if they just don't see eye to eye on, like, how do you cultivate? How do you find common ground?
It's funny that earlier, years ago, we would have spoken. I'm happy my son Moshe is here, and he's somebody Johnny has watched me, and we've grown together. And earlier, I would have spoken methods and tricks. And those things, methods are important, and we could speak methods. I'm getting to places that I believe sincerely. I'm a father. When my kids are, when a child's doing something and I'm hurt, because we're human and we get hurt from in all relationships. Instead of before I even think, what should I do? There's a place in me that's my son. It's in me. It lives in me. That's my son. And I ask myself now more, how can I tap into that place? How can I live aware of the place? Unconditional love is a place you can live in. It's not, unconditional, I'm smoking. I'm angry at my kid. I'm saying that I love my son. He's my son. She's my daughter. I have that place. I also have frustration, and I could live with both and work on both levels. I want to tap in. That's my child. I want to make sure I'm plugged into that reality, because we're at a danger when we're not living reality and we're not living. So the angry father, the upset mother is ignoring reality. That's my child. If you ever see a father raging at a kid, this tragedy is that they're ignoring reality and the father loves the kid. That's the craziest part. And it's so sad. In your anger, you forgot reality. So I'm not just saying demanding, well, he should be giving unconditional love. No, I think he should just be a father. And a father has love and he's out of touch with himself. When you observe a father raging on his kid, a mother with no patience on, lost patience on a daughter, she's actually forgotten her motherhood. And I don't think we should forget who we are ever. Now, what do? I have a range. I have unconditional love, but I'm also very concerned. Oh, there's ways we could resolve that. So it's less, the old me would have spoken to you methods. I say today, be truthful, be honest, and be in touch with that place. You get places. You really get. a lot of the answers of our life, I want to back. I stopped mid sentence. When we were younger, I was, and I still, I love the Muslim movement, and the Muslim movement has tremendous amounts to teach about human behavior and affected my life and remains very strong with me. What I needed also, and it's not to contradict, the Muslim movement's amazing, and we spoke our conversation a lot of what I should do. Here, it's my child, here, like contradictions and all these things inside of us, and it was a lot about methods. I started learning svarim that speak much more about who we are and what things are, and I'm interested in not just what we should do, but how we could tap in. And I think a lot of the behaviors, when you speak about unconditional love, a lot of the behaviors are just be a father. I promise you could be a father. When I have situation with a child, I have very good kids, Baruch Hashem, wonderful kids. When there's a challenge to my patients, I ask myself, how can I tap into being a father again? And I have different methods of being calm and then going back to that place of being a father. If it sounds flowery, we're souls. We're very big. Things are flowery. I think the deepest place, life is a Disney movie. There's Hashem, there's Ashkacha, there's things are good. It's hard to tap in. We have blockages. So that's what I want to give over at this point.
Something else that we talked about, I remember where I was. I was in my parents' home. I was living there at the time, and I was pacing back and forth, and I blurted this out to you. I said, unless you invent something, how do you make money in this world without being exploitative? You asked me if I'm practicing law. I'm very much practicing law, and I try and make good judgment calls, but there's a lot about the law, you know, that is exploitative. And that's how you make money, and it's glorified, and it's pretty much uninhibited in an ideal version of success. And you have to step on throats sometimes. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on, like, going out there in the world and trying to make a buck.
I love that question. I have this theory, and you'll accuse me of being optimistic. And I've been accused of that before in my life, of being positive. And there's a dangerous element. Are you ignoring reality? I have a theory that the world works. And there's definitely a sense that to get places, to accomplish, you have to step on people. To make money, you have to exploit and areas of gray. I have this theory that the world works. And Hashem designed the world that could work. I have seen rich people who are honest, who actually supply, and because they supply, get things for it. I have like this real belief that Hashem made a world that with honesty we can get places. I love finding those people that are doing it right and it works. I think honesty, people could be rich and honest. People could really supply things to the world and honest things and make a lot of money. It's very hard when we see it done not the right way, and when things that look cutthroat are successful, that like challenges us. What's that about? How is that? And those are the questions of like Russia, Vitovloy, Tzadik, Viraloy. But I think the normal, when you look around at the world, I think the world works. We all have friends, and we look to friends who do it honestly, who supply something and give something. And they get something for it. They provide good chairs to the world. They provide good content to the world. And they make money from it. I believe that, like, deeply. I have a friend who's a lawyer who has this, like, fire for truth. I could tell you his name. Zisha Grossberger is a friend of mine. And he does well, Baruch Hashem. And he has, like, this fire for truth. Hashem should bless him. And he's honest. And whenever he does well, with his honesty, it gives me a lot of chizuk. So for sure, all of us like grapple with this. The cheater, the cutthroat person, the step on people's person who seems to succeed. Tonight, ironically, it's Reb David Feinstein's yahrzeit as we're talking. We just entered this minute. And I asked his grandson, who I'm close to, Yosef, tell me something about your grandfather. And he said about his grandfather was the Gadol Hador. And he thought about it. The Feinsteins are very, very humble family. And they don't love grandiose stories. And they're quiet. Reb David Feinstein was a quiet person. And he said about his grandfather, he was the Gadol Hador. And you picture that somebody who leads, how many people would trample along the way. That's a huge picture. To get to the top of the mountain, who was pushed off the mountain? And he said, my grandfather never stepped on anybody his whole life. That was like the way of his life. And here he was the Gadol HaDor, and he never stepped on a person, and he ran the Jewish people. Just that there's a human being who's Yahrzeit's tonight, who was the leader of our generation and never stepped on anybody to get there. We watch politics of this one bashing, and the path to climb to the top might be running over people, and it looks that way. But we look for these examples, the Reb David Feinsteins of the world. I described this friend of mine, Zisha Grossberger, who's successful, not having run over in what I've seen, not running over, not cheating. So I do have a belief. Again, I'm accused. You're just being optimistic and positive. I think Hashem made a beautiful world, and one could do it correctly, and one's supposed to do it. My kids and I have this mantra. We say the world works, and we believe that, a weird belief.
That is very positive. Sometimes things don't work. You've done a lot of beautiful accomplishments. You've built a lot of different things, and I'm grateful for, I've benefited from a lot of them. But let's say Blue Ridge, which I enjoy, I'm only bringing this up because I feel like I have license to, I heard you talking about it, but that didn't take off. And so you kind of have to face this, like, wow, I really fell short of what, you know, people thought this development would have been next to a yeshiva. Like, how do you deal with failure? How do you deal with when it doesn't work? When it feels like it doesn't work?
It's a fair, the question, and to somebody who says the world works, and then we'll find times in our life that we're doing something right and something good and something we believe in. And then the question becomes, did it work? Didn't it work? You mentioned Blue Ridge is a beautiful city. Like, it's a, you've been there. Shabbos is magical. Is it the size I would have dreamed? It will get there. It's not been to the speed we wanted, for sure. But that question, I have a hero, somebody that I look up to, a historical person who's in Olam Haba today, and I ask myself, was he successful? Does he feel he was successful? And that question of what called success, and did it work the way we all want, there's a Hashem who has reasons, and I admit that that's where a lot of faith comes in. The world works, and I see, and Hashem shows me the world works. I have the faith of things that don't go the way we vision, that there are information we don't know. That's where a lot of faith does come in, but it only comes in at the point that we see enough, and Hashem shows us enough that we could say this world works. Then on things go in different ways than we expect, we say Hashem knows what he's doing. I don't have all the cheshbonos, but it's a fair question. We all face areas where we say, hey, the world. But if enough we see, and what we're exposed to and shown enough, that the world works. The analogy I would bring is we have people in our lives we trust a lot. Does that mean we then understand everything they do? They might be smarter than us. They might have cheshbonos. But I see enough and know enough of what I do understand to say, this person loves me. This person knows what they're doing. See, even when I don't understand, I'm allowed to say they're smarter. And our relationship with God, with him deciding, Hashem la'adam archelev, we have plans, la'ashem anelash, and Hashem decides what happens. We have enough in our lives of seeing Hashem's good, goodness pays, to say in the things I don't understand, Hashem is smarter.
How do you build in, so it's very, that's a nice thing, and you can, I can intellectualize that and say that that makes sense to me, but there's feelings sometimes of, I was talking to a friend of mine, Benji Weintraub, who I'm going to bring up again. I don't know if you even remember him. You met him once only, I think. So, but he had an interesting origin story with you. But I was talking about it with him last night. I did a podcast with some Jewish music artists, and the second I got into the room, I started cheshboning, like, okay, I'm a lawyer, so I fit here in the hierarchy. Like, it's okay that, you know, I felt a little under them, you know. And that feeling of jealousy, it's like a visceral feeling. You know, it's really, it's powerful. It's like you have to go to the bathroom. Like, it's that level, jealousy. Is there a way to harness it? You were talking about how you need to be in touch with your feelings and feel all the feelings. You can't just say, oh, I have faith that he's supposed to have that. And anytime you're in presence of something you want that you're stuck, you can't get it. You know, how do you deal with that?
I wanna circle back because I'm presenting something so pretty. I'm presenting like on the good things of life, feeling and the sense Hashem's so good and good works. I presented so pretty. And does life always feel that way? We're having this interview in the middle, our whole nation's facing something. Kalish gets up and says, the world works. Are you blind, you stupid, Kalish? And I'm saying, when it doesn't, when something happens, faith, so then the human condition, you describe jealousy, you're describing like feelings we have and emotions. I'm giving a picture of what is in us, of what we're shayach to, but a very, very complicated journey of getting there and feeling things that are different, of having times that were a lattice. I don't get this. It doesn't seem to be working. I like that question. In my life and in your life, we've had questions you ask about projects that don't seem to be working. I want to ask, Hashem, I was convinced your world works. And I like feeling that the guy who's saying the world works is not somebody who hasn't seen anything, who hasn't struggled, who hasn't said, it doesn't seem to be working. We've all turned to Hashem and said, it doesn't seem to be working. We've all asked that question. Esther Amalka says, Kaylee, Lamata Zavtani, why have you forsaken me? Now, she knows Hashem intellectually, never forsakes for a second. She knows intellectually whatever Hashem does for the good, and yet there's a place and a space to like, Hashem. So I'm not coming to say, and as a people, we're in a place of pain and discomfort and saying, Kaylee Lama Zavtani. So I'm not afraid of all the different emotions that come along and the questions of, oh, it doesn't feel at this moment it's working. I'm talking about when we're real and as we're real and what we sense and what we see and what we experience. And I think we can experience very deeply a world that works. So I'm not, again, tapping in. And I'm saying that we cannot just have faith. We could tap into a place that says, I don't know everything. I don't know Hashem's plans, we could tap into that place. But I don't mind that. It's messy along the way. And there are times all of us in a world that works, and we see enough, and we see in our own life that it works, then we bump into something, the tzaddik viralai. The tzaddik viralai, Hashem, it doesn't seem to be working. The kasher of tzaddik viralai, Moshe Rabbeinu knows that Hashem is smarter. He's asking that, why do you put bumps in the way and it doesn't feel like it's working? But that's the exception, and typically we could sense the world works. That's what I'm suggesting.
Something not really super connected, more closing the loop on what I said. Akiva Balsam, whose studio we're using, thank you very much. I forgot the name of the book. The Dopamine Secret.
Available on Amazon.
I read it, and one thing that was in there was that you should feel pain. You should enjoy pain. Like sometimes a low grade, don't get the Tylenol. Don't get the, you know, lean in. And it seems like you're even like, I'm not sure how you would relate to that thought based on what you're talking about.
Akiva is a friend of mine who I've studied with, and we like going through a lot of experiences together, and I completely agree with him. And a lot of these feelings, like you talk about deep jealousy that hits in, and you're like, you're a world that works, and I'm sitting smoking jealous. A lot of the feeling things and the pains and the question, the world's not working, feel that and process that. We get good places. I think deep in us are all the truths. And we get, when a guy's jealous, the main places, the problems we get is when we say, I'm not jealous, and you are. That's when all the problems of life come in. When we're feeling jealous and we acknowledge the feeling, we know what we're feeling. I actually think we have very positive self-talk. When I feel jealous, I have felt jealous many, many times. Somebody's success and you feel a jealousy, it's happened many times. I have very good conversations with myself about all different important things, and I get good places. The opportunity of feeling something is to process something. You actually get places. My son Maish and I had a conversation, a long conversation about this mamish today, and feeling things and really like facing what we're feeling, processing what we're feeling, those are some of the best places we get to in our life. So I'm not talking about forcing. I'm not talking about a pretty picture. We feel all different things. We're capable of processing, working it through, the self-talk. It's all in there. A guy is jealous. He's feeling rage and jealousy. See, you said the world works. That's not what he's feeling. He's feeling it's so unfair. This friend gets this. That's a cool, sit with that thought. So what are you feeling? The end of that process of feeling jealousy is very beautiful things. I speak about what my mission is. We have different missions, me and this other person. We don't, there's a chazal, we all have different spheres we're supposed to accomplish, a different light we shine to the world. And you have this whole like beautiful conversation with self. You end up like in beautiful places. People ask, but the jealousy is still there. Excellent. So now tomorrow I could have this conversation again. But then it didn't leave. Don't kick out your Rebbe. Jealousy is a Rebbe. All these feelings are good because you have good conversations with self. I find the main problem is the person who doesn't call out jealousy. And instead of being honest with a feeling and having a good conversation, they make shittas against the person and make all different shittas that have nothing to do with what they're feeling. That's dangerous. Kairach's rebellion was not a problem of jealousy. It was a problem of uncalled jealousy. He didn't call it out. He didn't, if he would acknowledge, hey, I'm jealous. In my family, I thought I'd get this. He would have gotten cool places. He had a Rebbe called jealousy he would have worked with to get to deep places. So I think the feelings, when we ask the question, Tzadik Viralei, the world's not working, sit on that question. Don't answer that question. Don't settle cheap. Don't pretend. Work through it. We'll get to good places.
Okay, so we'll circle back on that point to push through it. I was trying to be cute there, but something you did was really fascinating, making jealousy, anthropomorphizing it, saying it's a Rebbe. Guilt and shame, if they were people, what would you say to them if they were in the room right now? What's their tafkid? What are they?
I think that's such a cool question. So much of the generation is there's a lot of shame is very prevalent, and people explore, there's a lot of stress in the home, a lot of exposure. So the sixth grader was exploring this tremendous shame. Shame.
What do you mean by that? I'm sorry.
A kid as a youngster explored in unhealthy ways, he was in sixth grade, did all different things, and there's a lot of stress in the home and a lot of access. People curious, a lot of exploration today. And there's tremendous amounts of shame. Now, if I ignore my shame, the amount of damage somebody could do, feeling low, feeling puzzled, feeling like nothing, that shame can own a person and their whole life do negative behaviors. That's what, if they don't call out, the shame will dominate them and cause bad things. If a person actually talks to the shame, it says, when I was in sixth grade, I explored. Why did I explore? What was happening? And actually, like, analyzes, figures out, I think comes to place that I'm actually good. They find out what they were interested is in connection. That's cool. Connection isn't bad. They find out a lot of stuff that's really not bad, that's really very precious. Our roots are excellent. And if we actually like process it, you know when people feel shame, share it with a friend? Time and again, like 10 out are things that we think we're going to go to the grave with this secret. You share with somebody and the expectation is my friend will think. The friend then like respects you. And then you process, where'd I come to that? Why'd I come? You actually get to like beautiful places of who we are, of why we behaved. So if you actually like look deeper, what happened, why it happened, you find the deepest places of goodness. I think the problem is we don't explore and we let it own us without exploring it. So the kairach who makes a revolution and doesn't analyze his jealousy, the shamed person who just walks around that he's nothing and doesn't like look at the shame, what's the story that brought the shame, what were you going for, what did you... Oh, you wanted connection. You wanted badly. Now, was it misplaced? Was there a mistake? Can I fix up the mistake? For sure. All of a sudden, like this progress and process and this digging, and all of a sudden you come. I've seen so many people in our generation burst through with honesty. There are people who make a whole story of their life, and really they just have to resolve something in sixth grade. Now, that would exactly be it. The person who then spent a lifetime making up shittas, behaving in certain ways, and creating like whole worlds, the problem wasn't the source of the shame. The problem was lack of, like, focus. What gave me that? Why did I feel that way? What caused that behavior? When you analyze from the source, when there's honesty, we get to beautiful place and things become my Rebbe. I actually discover, like, a deep place. Huh? When you were younger, you were craving connection. Well, that's not.
You think that's what it boils down to?
Honesty. I think what I'm seeing.
No, the way to deflate bad behavior.
I think when we analyze sources, figure them out, face them, get into them, we find big things. A lot of places we think are big Yetzirah, like that's the darkest places, I think we find the biggest things there, yeah. But we're very afraid to go in there. In the darkest places, there is the biggest secrets of our goodness. I think that way deeply.
I remember telling this to you years ago, bring up my older sister, Aliza, who's like the biggest Harry Potter fan. And I think I made this juxtaposition that in all the books, there's this one bad guy and no one could say his name. They call him He Who Must Not Be Named. And the two people that are the most powerful is Dumbledore and Harry. And one of the attributes that they share is that they say his name. And it like deflates so much. And like that gives them the power, you know. So it's similar to what you're talking about.
I think it's brilliant. The Yetzirah is called the Tzifaini, the hidden one. And I think she was mechaven, J.K. Rowling was mechaven to something really big. I think there's a tremendous truth. She's tapping into the world, a truth of the dark places. We don't say it. Don't say that. In our world, we like wonder, Ayin Hara, when you say Ayin Hara, Al Tiftach Peh, Al Kol Tzara Shalei Tavi. We don't like saying certain things, and there's a truth to not saying certain bad things. There's also a danger of not facing certain things, a tremendous, I like figuring that out, but I think she tapped into something amazing. You're right. I remember you telling this. You're spot on. She tapped into something cool. The darkest places usually are the secret and the passageway to our deepest good places. I find that a lot.
Where do you draw the line of how do you know you are someone that has, even with me, like I feel this connection with you that I can just bare my soul and just like it's nothing, tell you my whatever's most bothering me. My problems aren't that interesting, but you've been with people that have very interesting problems. I mean, on the real outskirts of what we would consider normalcy. Like, how do you determine when is this guy a Barbish or a Rabbim? I need to tell people about this guy. Or, it's okay, I'll let it. It's good. It'll sit with me. And I'm sure you've also seen people blossom where they've done something that's just absolutely horrendous. And then you keep it on the down low. And then like 10 years later, you know, they're really flourishing.
Yeah. It's the question is like a loaded question. There's so many aspects to that question. That question can come in Shidduchim. Somebody is dangerous, so you have to say, and you're like describing, at what point is the person, yes, a Rasha? At what point do you have to expose him to the world? Those are real questions, halachic questions, and all of us, there are times to say. That's not like, I don't think we should go into the technical aspects, though we could speak about that. If the question is, are there times something must be said? Yes, unequivocally yes. To all, we have to be strong enough to say, to warn, to speak. I don't think like that contradicts, that's an awareness of something. That contradicts that as humans, we're capable of uncovering our greatness and getting to great places. And I don't think those two things...
Yeah, it's a false dichotomy. It's like a podcast trick of like, right. Now you have to take
right.
these two choices.
I don't look at those two things as contradictions. There's a sugya of what we say, when we say. But let's say a person's at a dark place and you have to warn somebody. Does that mean they're hopeless? Does that mean there's not greatness underneath? There could be that truth of having to say something and the truth of a great person who has a possibility of greatness and has to tap in. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. But it's a complicated dichotomy. It circles back, the unconditional love, but there's behaviors I got to correct. That's not a steer. There's nothing to do with each other. I unequivocally love and non-negotiable. And then there's another question. A person is doing something. What should I do about it? They're not exclusive, those questions. We lose sight in the question of one, we lose the other, and we have to not. In the question, but they're doing bad behaviors. I lost my love. I got out of touch with the love, stop getting out of touch with the love, and have both on the table at once, and we're capable, then we're very successful. So here, the hope and optimism is on the table at the same time with protection and what's my responsibility to others. They're both on the table. They both have to stay there. Now, if that creates like, the stress, those are good areas of life, and those are stressful areas of life, but still you have to live with that.
I have a few more sugyas, and then we're going to turn to the ilam over here to pipe up a little bit. But you were talking about machshava, thought, creating world, and maisa, and then doing. I'd love for you to encapsulate, if possible, if you can synopsisize that thought process that you were articulating, I heard you say in the shir.
In a world of school, which I like schools, we need systems and we need schools, and schools are very good. The world of school typically marks the world of action. How much did you know of this information? Were your behaviors this or this? And it's a very black and white world of what did you do? What did you accomplish? How many blot did you learn? How many hours did you study? And the world of school, it's really what we have. We live in a world of action, and all we could judge of each other is action. But there's a world of machshava, of thought, that human beings are not great at judging each other, because it's hard to know what the other person's thinking. In the world of action, if a person wants to do a mitzvah and didn't get schar, as if they did it. Now, it's dangerous to teach a world of machshava. So what do you mean? People are going to settle. They'll lie in bed and say, I wanted to go to Shacharis. So what? I didn't. But it actually matters what you want a lot. And the greatness of deed matters. Rahman Ali Baba, it matters what we think. And the world of thought, one of the greatest actions in our history was the Akkad that never happened. It was only a machshav. Avram wanted and was willing. This week's parasha, it's a world of thought matters. Rahman Ali Baba. And I think, even though we put such a stress on action, and we're right, and actions matter, but to try to get the heart to do it with drive and with rutzen and with optimism and excitement, and to get that world of machshava has to be part of our arsenal in teaching our children, teaching our talmidim. You have a guy in the yeshiva who does the least, but is actually like cares the most. Picture two guys, a very studious kid who studies 12 hours a day and a kid who by nature is very not studious. He studies an hour a day. Let's say that kid who studies an hour a day is working harder than the guy who studies 12 hours. In the world of action, 12 hours is 1 hour. In the world of Libabai, of Machshava, the person's love of Hashem and care might be more. That's dangerous to teach it, because everybody can cap out and say, I want, who cares what I do? So you become a very dangerous person when you care about the world of Machshava. It is not to exclude a world of Maisa. The world of Maisa and push and accomplish, and certainly let's do 12 hours as best as we can, but be passionate, connect to it, care, make sure the Machshava, the beautiful Machshava is there. It's interesting, Yitzi, this is like an interesting thing. It says on the mincha of an ani, there's a rich man's carbon and a poor man's carbon. On the poor man's carbon, Hashem says, I consider as if he brought his soul on the flower. So now you're a dangerous guy. You made a sheet of bringing the poor man's carbon. So should the rich guy bring the poor guy's carbon? No! Bring the million-dollar carbon. You're not making a sheet of doing less. You're making a sheet of meaning it. There's what to learn from the poor guy brings the flower. There's such sincerity. Now, the dream of life is to bring the rich guy's carbon with the poor guy's sincerity. So what Chassidus stresses in shul, the person who doesn't know what he's saying and can't even say the words, everybody's saying tilim for a klali. So this is like the classic Chassidic story. It's the whole shul. Maish is not the classic story. The whole shul is davening. Everybody's praying, and there's one kid who can't read. And he just, in the midst of all the, like, saying the tillim, he can't read, he's sitting, he doesn't know what to do, and he just, like, shouts, ah! And his tefillah saves Klal Yisrael. That's, like, the standard. So now, what's the lesson? Nobody should read tillim. Read everything you could read. There's an Olam HaMaisa. It matters, actions.
Always have that kid for the parrots. There's always a parrots that's, like, endangering the, right? It's like,
In the story also, there's a
wagon driver,
there.
There's a part.
But the world of Chassidus is teaching a world of Pnimius that Machshava matters. the people who are very afraid of that world say, does Maisa matter? Of course, it matters, action. It matters profoundly. But don't ever forget the pure scream of the of that child who couldn't read. So it's not promoting, hey, maybe I'm better off not knowing how to read. No, it's promoting sincerity. It's very dangerous competing just who learns the most hours, but is that competition real? Fine, there's something to, the Olam HaMaisa matters, but with sincerity, with authenticity, with simcha, with it.
Something else that you said was that the world of Maisa has a lot of fakeness, like the classic politician, he's in his suit, but he's digging the shovel, and that's the one that gets publicized, it goes viral, he's helping, and like, you know, the world of machshava is closer to truth. Truth is how I define soul. I don't know if that's a good definition.
Yeah, I like that a lot. But I think we're both very in agreement on this. And in all our systems, and I'm curious, I would be curious what the guys think. Because in our systems, we have no choice but really to push a world of action. And it says, it's actually based on a pasuk. It says, "Hanigloys lanu l'vanenu." The revealed is what we see. Hanistareis l'Hashem l'kenu. The hiddens to God. We have no capacity, like even to make a system that promotes. How do you have a system that promotes that? Like kid who's the most sincere. We don't have a measurement for it. So you know, you give out an award, the most sincere guy in the school. How do you know? That's a world that's very hard to... So the only thing we could judge is who prays the loudest, who learns the most blood. And it's true, there's a world of Maisa. Somehow getting into our education system in a real way, and again, the danger of only living in the Olam HaMaisa is that it matters. Rachmana Libaboy, the Ikar is the simcha, the tov leva, the sincerity, the authenticity. And I don't know the answer. And I worry in a world that only stresses the authenticity, are you limiting people's actions? If you say over enough stories about the kid, I'm curious what my son Maish would say. I'm curious Yiddi. I'm curious Akiva. I'd love guys to get up here. I want to give guys turns to share that in any education system, if we only speak about the world of action, so you have people competing for the most actions, and that's what's respected. The smartest, the biggest masmid, the one who could sit the longest. So you have a guy who by nature is very studious and he could sit long hours and he's like, wow. You have another guy who's energetic and his little sitting. But how do we teach that the pnim matters, that the simcha sachayim? So I'd love, Maishi, if you can come, I'd love to hear.
Yeah, I'll let him take my seat, please.
Hello, Maish. Hey, nice to sit with you, Maish.
I'm usually used to that side. It's funny to be on this side of the cameras. Pretty scary, honestly. from that side.
A lot of what I'm giving over in an honest way, I've learned from my son, Maish. If it sounds funny or to say to anybody, Yitzi didn't ask me to come on and say lies. From my own children, and Maishi specifically, who understands areas of emotions that I was not aware of, and still I'm working towards, I've learned a lot from Maishi, a lot. And it's mutual, we've learned from each other. It's not a pretending, it's just the reality. And I'm curious that there's a world that's caring about that inner, about how connected we are to what we do. And I'm curious that a school system can measure action and push action. What would you say? Like, I don't even know. Like, how would you in a system? What would you do in a system that would give respect, that would honor the sincerity without compromising? Is there a way that we don't compromise productivity? And We speak, and my son, I'm putting him on the spot, and it's the question of our generation. We're a generation that wanted, all of us agree it's important to come on time to davening, not to miss. We also agree it's important to pray and mean it. Now, all we can mark is attendance. Did he come on time? Is he there? And we pressure that and push that. And we have a generation, is he on time? Now, all of a sudden, we have a generation. My son has taught me connection. Hey, and neither is negotiable. It's not negotiable to be there, but it's not negotiable to connect. And Maishi has taught me a world of connection. And are you feeling it? Are you meaning it? Are you praying with sincerity? How do we, like in a school, celebrate the kid? You know, we celebrate who's on time. We see that. The kid who means it. Like, what would be done in an education system? I'm curious, Maish. And maybe the answer is shrug. I don't. What would you say to that, Maish?
It's a good question, first of all. I would ask it back, probably, honestly, first. But I feel like it's definitely a thing. I'm not sure. I don't know if it's maybe not something you could teach, really, so I don't know if it answers the question. But there's definitely something, I think, that we teach a world of that your value is based on what you do very much. And the top people get respect. I think very much just not that you could even teach sincerity, just teaching the fact that you're respected no matter what, as you said, that we have a soul and we're not based on how much we learn this second. There could be a pressure to learn, not based even off someone. Once you teach that your value is based on how respectable you are, it goes past, I think, to some degree, even how much, even if you're out of school anymore, you learn to yourself even. Not even, so it's not just a school question almost, even to yourself, that how much is my respect, how much am I worth, is based a little bit on maybe and how much I could do. And if you're taught that to a certain degree, if there's a space that if I specifically, maybe even a time that don't do anything and just sit with it, just sit and specifically don't waste time, have a time a day, you specifically maybe even waste time. It sounds crazy to say, and when I say waste, I don't necessarily mean waste, whatever that means, and that you're still just sitting there and you're still good. It's not, you could now create a space, a school maybe teaching that just not the top is respected. You're giving a space now that there's no space for, I don't know if you could teach to be authentic, but you're giving a space now that someone could be authentic. As much as you're forced to perform, to be noticed, you need to perform. You're not giving, whether you could teach it or not, there's no space for it, even if to learn it on yourself. However much, even if you can't teach it, which I'll ask that back, if you could teach authenticity, which you definitely could teach by example, which perhaps I might learn. Just even more than that, just a space, a school, whether they can teach it or not, in a practical school, just a space for it is very, it's an important thing.
I'll be honest, I like what you're saying, and I'm nachas what you're saying. Do you worry that will decrease productivity, that less blot will be learned? If we have a system, the guy who learns the most blot's respected. Boy, a lot of blot I learned. Could you imagine they raffle off my Simchas Torah? They have the most blot. The numbers go high. Can you imagine we raffle off only who's going to learn the blot the most sincerely? It's an area, like, do you worry less productivity? I wonder about that.
But I remember in first year, my Rebbe actually asked that we had on my Geisler. He didn't have share the most the first year. And he said something like similar to this, it's the first time in my life that I'm, not the first time, the first time in a yeshiva system, before I came to Waterbury, in that kind of system where they're pushing learning, that the kid who's learning is almost like a nebuch. We all look down at him, like, hopefully one day he'll, like, be a little, like, he probably fit. The whole shir is looking at the most, like, the kid that would be, came from his last school, ever came in expecting to be the most respected kid, and he's, like, almost looked down to, like, a little nebuch, like, shoot, maybe one day he'll be more authentic, and I asked him, kind of, is he scared? And he didn't answer, so it's definitely, like, the question of everyone doing this, like, for sure. I guess maybe a little around the question, I for sure it's true that, I speak for myself, when you're on performance mode, it could be you get more done. I'm not God and I can't say what's more valuable. I speak for myself, it's not comparable. You learn a little more when you're pushing, it's not going anywhere. I'm not God to decide that though. I can speak for my own feelings. Even though when you're feeling it, it happens. Maybe those people are such warriors, they could do it forever. Maybe, I don't know. I guess there are out there. For the average human being, when you're feeling it, it might be less in the beginning, maybe a little bit more. When you're feeling it and it's going deeper. I'm picturing even the learning that I do out of forest, when I'm coming from a forest place, I'm not learning as deeply. I'm distracted. I'm pushing. I'm uncomfortable. Like, it could be less time, but it's even in Maisa, it might be deeper in a lot of ways.
I think anybody who says the thing that Maishi says, there's a space for when I don't feel it. Nobody's promoting only. It's human that, no, it's important. It's important to say, I think it's when people say we don't, like, there's no place where we don't feel it. We all, every word we're saying here, could you say you were connected? It's a path towards. So you're right, that times we don't feel. And discipline is that place we don't feel plugging and pushing. I'm very moved when I'm listening to Maish. I'm like learning from it and plugging in. I want to say about him and his Rebbe, Rai Geisler, and their friends that they learn a lot. And it like answers, because his world where he taught to be comfortable, to do almost less comfortably, I see translates to more. So hearing Maish talk about it, that when I'm connected to it, I do more and accomplish more. I like hearing it because I'm watching it. I'm watching that in Maish. So I appreciate your words. I appreciate a lot what you're saying, Maish.
Can I add something that I got from you? So it's funny to add it in, but I think I just heard this from you. Maybe even 2 days ago you said this in Mustard, I think. But you spoke about that not feeling it. It could become like a, I should let you say it because I heard it from you, but I really enjoyed it, so I'll repeat it. You spoke about, I think, that not feeling could easily become this like religion of like not feeling fighting. Not feeling is telling you something also. Why? What you spoke about before, I think, is very like not feeling become, it's funny that people say like the good days and bad days. Every speaker loves it. I have a good day and a bad day. And it's like important to know when you have a bad day, it's the good day is going to come. And it always annoyed me, and I think why, because it is true, we have good days and bad days, and bad, but even the bad time, it's telling me something. Why am I not feeling it? It's like time to work on why am I not enjoying it. Maybe a trauma's coming up. When I say trauma, I don't mean in a tense way. Maybe an uncomfortability and learning is coming up. It's giving you an opportunity to like, that when the good day comes, it's not just, oh, the good day's back now, and I got to, God appreciated my pain and the suffering. God's not a vengeful God trying to get something. When you have a loving father, you appreciate that God wouldn't make sense as a father that he would enjoy your pain. So if he's giving us a bad day, which we understand he's giving us a bad day, it can't just be to now give. So now when I, oh, he enjoyed our pain so much, now I do it now, and they make like a speech out of it even. So you do that, the good now, God knows how much you love it, because he's giving you a gift then also. It has to be. Why is he doing it? Just to get some pain out of you? He's doing it so in the bad day when it's hard, it's letting you work on that part of it now.
It's so cool with the son. Anybody listening is like, why didn't this guy speak much more? You're right. And it's so interesting because Maishi will quote me and I'll quote Maishi. And the truth is that our journey, our continuous journey, a lot of things I say, I saw in him, learned from him, was told, and it becomes blurred because we're close to each other and our journeys are clearly interlocked. So things Maishi has worked through have taught me, things I've worked through have taught him. And so I could quote him quoting me, quoting him, quoting me, quoting him. If you hear this, it's kind of cool. I want to thank Yitzi really for giving me this opportunity to speak, to share. I want to thank my son's friend CJ Kurtz is here. And Maishi could have quoted CJ, and CJ would quote Maish, because we're on a journey, really. His friend Avi is here, and Yidi and Akiva, and everybody, Shmuel's here. We all, our journeys are interlocked. We're studying each other, learning. It's a continuous journey. I thank you, Yitzi. Your journey has always been so, you say, like, mine's not complicated. All our journeys are complicated. All our journeys are rich, are fascinating, are a great story. You've always been honest and, like, shared, and it's moved me. And I try to be honest, try to learn from you. With an optimism could also cover, like, you don't want to get into the, and I'm learning under the optimism to feel the challenge and the difficulty. So I thank you for sharing with me. I look forward to sharing from you. We'll quote each other. Yitzi taught me, who I taught him, who he taught me. We'll both continue to learn from each other. Thank you so much for this opportunity. Thank you.